Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, November 28th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today, I have the honor of introducing you to an exquisite photographer from right here in the Emerald City. Join us as we scrutinize the erotic mind of David Peterman. You know, despite David's protestations that he is not an erotic photographer, I think you will agree with me, all his other friends, as well as the juries at the annual Seattle Erotic Art Festival, that he is a master of his craft. Okay, so David's photography isn't erotic in the conventional sense of that word. In fact, there is a whimsy and playfulness in his work that often flies in the face of what most might consider erotica. But, to my mind, this is precisely what makes his work so satisfying, delightful, and intriguing. He unabashedly celebrates the human form in the most extraordinary and riveting way. For more of David, his amazing work, and vision, I encourage you to visit his website, theyareonlypixels.com. And there you will find a link to his insightful blog. And be sure to look for him on Twitter, too. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The video library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh, so informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome to Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, David, and thank you for joining us. I'm so stoked that we could make this time to be together. Would you like to say hello to all the nice people?
Well, just hello all you nice people. It's wonderful to be here.
There's perverts in the audience, too, you know. So you
surprise,
want to say...
Surprise, yeah.
Yeah, really. My audience, get out. Who would have guessed? So, listen, I've been spending a lot of time on your website, theyareonlypixels.com. It's so unique, and there's a whimsy and playfulness, one might even say a wholesomeness, to your depictions of nude and near-nude models that a lot of other sites that feature similar photography don't seem to have. Is that your intention? And if so, why do you do it?
Oh, I don't know if it's so much intent as just the natural product. I think the main thing is, in so many of the photography things I do, I just kind of create the setting and really rely on the models to do what they want, do what they're comfortable with, and it's for me, it's more rewarding. Well, it creates less work for me on the front end, which is great, but to just let people do what they're comfortable with, and, you know, I guess a lot of it does translate into what you just said, kind of whimsical and playful, because that's kind of the mode a lot of people just fall into.
Right. Do you think that has something to do with about being naked? You know, I mean, we even those who are among us who are sexually progressive seem to have still a little bit of, I don't know, like a sense of naughtiness about being naked.
I mean, it could be, you could kind of divide the models I use into two categories. There are one half is people who are performers by profession, by nature, performers,
right.
Dancers, whatnot.
Yes.
And so they're going to be very playful and everything, in pretty much everything they do.
Uh-huh.
The others are just, they're everyday people. They're not models. They're not performers. They're just people who were intrigued and volunteered to be in my projects for whatever reason. And for them, a lot of them, it is kind of a fun, liberating moment. So I think they kind of run with that.
Right. So after spending so much time on your with your images, I'm prepared to say that they are not only eye candy, but they're mind candy. What do you say about that?
Oh, I think that's fair. I mean,
good.
You know, to me, it's always it's up to the person looking at it how they want to interpret it, and if other people, you know, get a reaction of mind candy or whatever, that's totally fine. Other people might see it different, and that's valid too.
Right, right, right. So, tell us how you came up with "They Are Only Pixels." I sense that there's a story there.
You mean the actual the name?
Yes, of your site.
Probably just because a lot of things, whenever I try to describe things, I'm just very, very literal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was coming up with a name for the site, I just kept coming up with very literal names, like, you know, like, and I did, but I didn't want to go something like a whole bunch of pictures of nakedpeople.com. Wanted to go a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you have to go through the filter of what web domains are available.
Right.
And between the two, I just kind of came up with that, and it just kind of fit for me.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, and again, this is probably me reading into this, but after so many episodes in this Erotic Mind series and talking to so many really marvelous artists, both literary and visual, a lot of people still say that, you know, for the most part, people have difficulty with erotic and nude and semi-nude depictions of humankind. And I just thought it was so wonderful that, you know, and this was, again, me reading into this, that, you know, actually, you know, photographs are just pixels. And, you know, they come together in a particular sort of way. But when you break it all down, it's just pixels.
Yeah, if you're looking at it on the screen, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. So when I first asked you to participate in this Erotic Mind series, you looked at me kind of funny and you said, "My work isn't erotic." And I've heard several protestations of the kind from other illustrious guests in this series. So let me ask you right from the get-go, how is it that your work appears to great acclaim at the Seattle Erotic Art Festival, and many of our mutual friends think you are a kick-ass erotic photographer, but that you don't consider yourself such?
I guess a lot of it is just, you know, it kind of comes around to an intent. I have never lifted my camera to my eye with the intent of, I'm going to make an erotic photo now.
Right. Interesting.
And if it comes around, if some people find the output to be erotic, that's totally fine.
Right.
And of course, then, you know, for the past 3 years, I've shown at the Seattle Erotic Art Festival, mostly because that's just the venue that makes sense for my work. I'm not going to try to get it in the lobby at KeyBank or, you know, on the side of buses or anything like that.
Which is too bad, because it would really look good on the side of a bus.
Oh, I mean, if we got to the point where this type of stuff was on the side of the bus, then I would say, I would high-five society there.
Right.
Like, you know,
so true.
That'd be great.
So true.
And I don't actively shop around stuff to place in other galleries or anything. So, the Erotic Art Show is kind of the one outlet where, you know, you can put this type of stuff. And even if, you know, in my mind, you know, a lot of the stuff I submit there isn't what I consider to be erotic, but as I say, it's still the best venue for it. So I think that kind of helps perpetuate why the term erotic gets applied to my stuff.
Right. And just to further that inquiry, are we, your fans, reading something into your work that you didn't plan to be there? Is it a philosophical or semantic difference, or are you just being modest about being immodest?
Maybe we just have to kind of resurrect the quote from Stuart Potter, the Supreme Court justice, when he said, you know, about obscenity, "I know it when I see it."
Yes, right.
And we'll soften that a little bit and say, you know, erotica, "I know it when I see it."
Yeah.
And again, it's different people are going to see things differently, and everyone has different perceptions.
Right.
And as I've said, it's, everybody's perception is totally valid.
Right. And there have been guests on this show that do not depict any nudity at all, and yet their stuff is highly erotic, and even they would agree with that. So it is, as you suggest, perhaps involved in the intention. And when you say that you have never lifted your camera with the intention of shooting an erotic image, how do you practice? How do you not do that when? Which gets me back to my original question about wholesomeness and playfulness in your depictions. Are you just letting people have fun in their birthday suit?
And also like a lot of the underwater stuff I do isn't even fully nude. There's
That's right.
Especially the burlesque people, they travel with trunks, both props.
True.
No matter where they go to the grocery store, they have a suitcase because they make costume changes in every aisle of the store. But
it's so true.
Yeah, so part of it is just letting them, kind of vamp it out, do what they're doing, and at all times, if I have any goal, it's just to make a cool, interesting picture. And that hopefully other people will enjoy it, whatever level they choose to enjoy it. But really, that is virtually always my goal. If I have any other goal, it's usually because I'm trying to figure out something technically, like how can I accomplish something, and so maybe I'm working through that at the same time. But as far as thinking about the finished product, the reception, how other people are going to view it, I just want it to be an interesting, fun, cool picture.
So I was intrigued by something that you wrote on the Common Thread page of your site.
Mm-hmm.
You write, the goal of the Common Thread project was to connect 60 naked, I add that word myself, people in a single shot, all united through a single red rope. I don't want to say too much more about the intent of the project because I found that different people have their own interpretations, and I'd rather not introduce any bias into how someone might view it. So does that help explain what we've been talking about so far, that why there may be a disconnect between what you think about your work and what others think about your work?
Possibly. I mean, for example, that project, when I was starting it and kind of had it in my head, it became very clear how if I had started off by saying that it represents how we're all connected to
each other,
how we're all one humanity or something like that, then everybody, that would have tainted everybody who came to pose to it. They probably would have been much more somber and statuesque and everything.
Well, how did you pitch it to them then? I mean, did you say, this is what I'm going to do? I'm going to connect 60 people with a red rope?
Red is basically the project description. I mean, that's all that we had to go with. And then what I typically do is when I'm starting these projects, I have a couple guinea pigs come over and I shoot a whole bunch of shots to kind of kind of seed the project.
I see.
And, get it started so I can point people to that and say, here's what it's looking like. I want you to be the next person in the line.
I see.
And then, I try not to say anything more about it. That particular project was interesting because when it was on display at SEA earlier this year, and I was kind of hanging out next to it and chatting with people, I had several people tell me about the project. I mean, they knew it was mine.
Oh, so, cool. Okay.
They weren't puffing up and being an art historian or anything like that. But they started kind of, how to describe this, but I think they thought they understood the whole basis behind it and were talking to me about that. And it was fascinating hearing other people's, how they chose to interpret it. And, every one of them, they'd go through this, and I'd say, that is fantastic. And I said, I don't want to take anything away from, how you're reacting to this, but the reality is I made it because I thought it would look neat. And end of story. But it was just interesting how some people would look at it and immediately create this whole narration around it. One person who's I should probably shouldn't name names, but she's fairly prominent in the sex positive community nationwide. She was telling me how I had perfectly captured the essence of the, I believe, Japanese legend of the red thread, about how the gods connect an invisible red thread between lovers. And I just kind of smiled and nodded politely and went home that night and Googled Japanese red thread to find out what the hell she was talking about.
Uh-huh.
And actually, her interpretation was actually... It actually kind of fits, and it was totally appropriate. But I had never heard of it until that moment, which I thought was hilarious.
So your art, you know, can be on some level actually a blank canvas, you know, for the audience, and they can create something, an overlay on top of your art. It sounds
if they want to, absolutely. Huh, I mean,
interesting.
You know, I don't. Yeah, I even kind of hesitated with the project we were just talking about. I hesitated even calling it the common thread because I was worried that almost had connotations.
Right.
It would have been much more like me to call it a whole bunch of naked people holding a red rope. And let it go from there. But common thread was just kind of a working title that I threw up at the beginning, and it just kind of stuck, and so let it go. Yeah.
How interesting. Fascinating. So let's move on and talk about another one of your signature projects. We mentioned this just moments ago, the Underwater series. Can you talk to us about that? These images completely knocked me out.
Yeah, a few years ago, I had run across a few examples of some, you know, high-quality underwater work. Probably one of the most famous guys is a photographer named Howard Schatz. He's put out a couple books, and I mean, he did this a few years ago, and just did just beautiful, beautiful stuff. And I was just kind of thumbing through his books, and it kind of just dawned on me that I had access to everything necessary to attempt this, as far as access to a pool, access to models. I could get the underwater gear that I needed, and mostly started it as a technical challenge to see, you know, how do you pull this off? How do you deal with lighting and backgrounds and all these other issues? And let's see, I think of course, being in Seattle, you can really only do this in the summer.
I was going to say that next. That we're not in Southern California.
Exactly. I mean, the window of opportunity is very short unless you want to pay rental on one of the community pools.
Right.
And even then, you're going to have to, it might be a little dodgy with naked models
right,
and everything.
Right.
So really, there's only like about a 2.5 month window out of the year where this is viable. And done it, I guess this just was the fourth year I've done it this past summer. And man, just constant learning experience. And typically, I come up with some learning breakthrough at the end of the season, and then I have to scribble down a whole bunch of notes so I can hopefully remember everything too for the next year.
Right, because it's daunting. I know nothing about photography, and underwater photography just sounds like it's even more difficult for any number of reasons.
It is, and probably the biggest reason is that you have no control over a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Photography is all about controlling things, especially controlling the light and
right, and
your subject. And underwater, where the models can't see you very well, you can't really control the lighting, you can't control gravity, you know, all these things are just happening. And so a lot of it is, you know, just kind of setting up a very rough scenario and agreeing to that with the model, like, okay, we're going to go down, and I want you to kind of look that direction and go. And truly, then it is a matter of just firing off,
I see,
quite literally thousands of pictures in a session. I will end an afternoon with about 2,500 shots, and then I hope to get about, narrow that down to about 10 that are really great.
And they are, they're they're absolutely spectacular. It looks they look so like, you know, oh, and I happen to be down here under the water with my camera, and and there's this naked lady, mm-hmm. you know, swimming by, and Shazam.
Or a woman, or a beautiful woman wearing a full-length wedding dress just swimming right by.
And so I just, you know, naturally snapped her picture, you know. So it's really, it really is astonishing stuff. I just spend so much time just looking around. It's really, really grand.
Yeah, it's, doing the underwater stuff is also kind of quite a surprising discovery thing for me, because while I'm taking the pictures, I can barely see the model, even though I'm wearing goggles. But I'm goggles looking through this the viewfinder on the underwater camera case, then through the camera, then out to the other side of the camera case. And so my view is very distorted, and I usually have no idea of what I've captured until I'm actually downloading it onto the computer.
Wow, how interesting.
And so, you know, like later that day, it's like a whole other little, you know, present opening experience for me. So.
I love it. Mm-hmm. So another one of your series is the Self-Censored Photos Project. And you say about this on your site, the idea behind the Self-Centered Photo Project was to give the models direct, immediate control over how their nude images is presented to the their nude image is presented to the world. They were free to cover as much or as little as they want, or even mask their identity completely. My original plan was for them just to use plain black bars, but it then became more interesting to have the bars with assorted words on them, ranging from the classic censored to the outright smutty. My goal was to get shots of at least 100 people by the end of 2009. Fortunately, I have many willing friends and was able to wrap things up almost on schedule. The final part of the project was to combine all of the images into an interesting printed display. And the final framed piece is about 28 inches by 38 inches, with each individual image being 2 inches by 3 inches. The finished self-censored project was shown at the 2010 Seattle Erotic Art Festival. You have some amazing friends.
Oh, tell me about it. Yes.
Do they vie for, you know, like, oh, I want to be, please.
Anymore. Yeah. It's quite wonderful. I mean, I barely have to let it be known that I've started a new project and the emails start coming in, which is great.
Right.
The self-censored project came about in a kind of a slightly roundabout way. My wife and I went to Burning Man for 12 years in a row, starting in 96. And then we, I think our last year must have been about 2007. And we were kind of debating about whether we were going to go the next year and all this. And I said, well, if we're going to go, we have to have a project, some project to keep us busy. And because of all the previous years we'd been, the ones that where we had the best time were ones where we were actually involved doing things.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to do something kind of photo-based. And the idea of people censoring themselves came to me because, of course, there's a lot of people walking around Burning Man naked. And I thought, oh, since everyone's always trying to take pictures of the naked people, let's take pictures of the naked people, but with, you know, holding the black censor bars in front of their bits and everything. And then we decided not to return to Burning Man. But I still liked this idea, so I just picked it up as a local project. And yeah, I wasn't sure because I thought, gosh, you know, I want this. I want a whole bunch of people. It just wouldn't be as interesting to have like 10. I wanted to go big on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't entirely sure how successful I'd be at getting 100 people, but as it turned out, it was not a problem.
Yeah. So the interesting thing, at least to my point of view, is that these little tiny images, 2 by 3 inches, make up like almost like a pixel, you know, make up the big project.
And oh yeah, definitely.
That's what's so fascinating to me, because lots of, you know, I've interviewed a lot of photographers who shoot nude models, but the image is the image, not a pixel in a bigger work.
Well, with the self-censored project, it kind of ended up in its final dimensions for two reasons. One was I just thought there was something appealing about taking each person down to a small size, mm-hmm. and plus that also helped in the recruitment of people when I would tell them, well, it's going to be kind of small, so if you're a little uncomfortable about this, it's not like, you know, you're going to be blowing up really big or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was that. And then the second was just the logistical. I wasn't exactly sure how to mount 100 individual images and get it framed and everything. So right. that keeping each image kind of small helped. But then it did have the end effect that you just described. If you kind of stand back and squint, it almost looks like it's trying to make another picture.
Right.
It's not. I did not try to put some meta image, right. you know, in there. That would have been an insane amount of work. But I totally agree. If you kind of stand back and squint, it does look like a pixelated something, which I guess kind of adds to the appeal, like, right. you know, something hidden in that it's censored.
So you really like these group projects. What is it about them that pleases you so?
I mean, it might be that I'm a project manager by profession.
Oh, so there you go.
Drawn to organizing large, complex projects. But there's also the appeal on the creation and then the presenting of the final thing, that it's something special happens when you have all these people in the creation. It's fun to just meet a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the first couple projects were full of people who, you know, we either knew directly or, you know, maybe at first, you know, out one or two circles of friends. As you know, notoriety has spread, meeting so many more people who, you know, have never known before, who
right.
you know, friends of friends of friends and
cool.
whatnot. And it's just very interesting having all these new people come over and participate in the project and get to meet them and, you know, share a little experience with them, even if it's only for 20 minutes. And then it's just really, really fun when these things are on display, because everyone walks up and plays the I know that person and that person and that person and that person game. Everyone's trying to find their coworkers
uh-huh.
and their neighbors. And, you know, it just makes it very interesting. Last year when getting ready to display at CIF, I told them, you know, just anytime you have any project like mine with a lot of people, put it somewhere where a crowd of people can stop and not pinch off a hallway or something
right,
like
right,
that
right.
because
yes, exactly.
people linger at it because they want to look at everybody there
right.
and see who all they know. And it's just really, really fun to watch that happen.
Right. So this is a great segue because you are preparing yet another project called Ant Farm. And here's what you say about it on your site. I need 100 people to populate the ant farm. When finished, the ant farm will represent a structure 40 feet high and 30 feet wide. It will be made of 100 rectangular boxes divided roughly 50-50 between horizontal and vertical, and in each box is a single person. Some might appear to be isolated from everyone else. Some might choose to acknowledge or interact with their neighbors. The exact pose is up to the person and will have an effect on the overall mood and tone of the finished piece. Who knows, when it's all done, I may decide that the name Ant Farm will no longer be valid and call it something completely different. The Ant Farm will be displayed at the 2012 Seattle Erotic Art Festival, and this is a great way to get in on the fun of CIF if you don't have the time to do your own project. So tell us more. What are some of the particulars and who can participate?
Okay, so I knew I wanted to do something else big with a whole bunch of people again, and I really liked the interaction that people had with the Common Thread project.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted to interact with each other, they could be totally separate if they wanted, or they could interact. And so I just kind of envisioned a whole bunch of bodies all over a canvas, and the first thing that kind of popped into my mind was a typical, you know, ordered from the back of a comic book ant farm,
uh-huh.
where all these little different openings where the ants are in there doing their own little thing and, you know, moving about. And so I started sketching that up, and what I'm doing is actually much more of a rigid, stylized structure. It doesn't really look like sand between two pieces of glass with a little green plastic barn on the top, like an, like an ant farm. But again, the name Ant Farm just kind of stuck, and it's been kind of fun because I'm getting emails from people that say, I want to be an ant. So that's fine, they can be an ant.
Right.
But
cool.
So the particulars are I built a prop that helps me get people in the proper space, if you will,
right,
kind of a framed area, either horizontal or vertical. That's totally their choice.
Yes.
And it's funny, some people are really big on one or the other.
Is that right?
It's hilarious, but most people just kind of, yeah, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll take either way. And so they climb into the structure, and there's a black frame around just to kind of help them stay within the dimensions, the proper aspect ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they can do whatever they want. Some people just want to kind of just stand there. Some people strike a pose. Some people, if they come with their friends or their partner or something, I'll arrange it so when they're finished, they're side by side and they can be interacting with, mm-hmm. with each other.
But basically, you're shooting individuals, and
yes, each shot is individual.
So, if it happens that they are interacting with, you know, the ant next to them, it's they don't really know that for certain.
Well,
yes?
if they want to, if it's two people together and they want to be working together, then we have to do a little bit of acting,
right?
Where you know, like person A will be standing there, and person B will be off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say, okay, look at person B, and then they kind of swap, you know, places.
Right,
and,
I got it.
But there is only the one set piece.
Yeah.
For example, these last couple of days have been amazingly creative. I had a ballerina who struck this perfect on point with both her feet, which it just kills me to watch people stand on their toes. It's just amazing. And then she was followed by a woman who's an accordion musician, and we had her posing with her accordion. And then the next couple people was this couple, and they're big fans of the Wonder Twins, you know, and with the whole Wonder Twins activate type thing. So we had them standing side by side, doing the Wonder Twins fist bump between the two with a big. I photoshopped in a big yellow spark coming off their hands. That all happened on the same day, and it was just like, it's just awesome, all this different creativity that people were requesting and wanting to do.
And your models really do bring this with you. I mean, because a lot of the artists that I've talked to in the past, I mean, they're responsible for the script. They're scripting everything. They pose their models. They do everything. You are letting your models, you know, to be really part of the creative process.
Oh, I'm counting on it because, as I said, if I wanted to, you know, sketch out what I wanted 100 individual people to do, that would be insane.
Yeah.
But everybody brings something, and you know, as I'm saying this though, if anyone's listening to this and they think they might want to take part, I don't want to scare anyone off and make them think that they have to think of something, because probably 75% of the people show up with no ideas and. I put them in the box, and we just start kind of working through things.
Interesting.
And now, as it gets farther along, I might need people to do specific things.
Right.
Because, for example, someone else I shot a couple of days ago had just found this awesome old Polaroid camera at Goodwill, the type that you open up and has big bellows and it expands out. And so I shot her as though she spotted something interesting happening off to the side, taking a picture. And so now, at some point, if someone comes and says that they have absolutely no idea, I can say, hey, let's have you be the person that this person is taking the picture of.
How cool.
And have them pose that way.
Wow.
So yeah, sometimes I'll have a very specific idea of something I need, but that's kind of rare.
Right.
It's almost always up to the person.
Right. Well, David, I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time for today is up, and I'm just getting to the marrow of you, as it were. Can I invite you back for next week for
Absolutely.
More discussion? Oh, you're wonderful. Yeah. Thank you very much. I sure appreciate it. Good. So, but before we leave for today, would you give us your website address and walk us around a bit? What can we find there?
Oh, sure. The address is theyareonlypixels.com. There's no spaces or funny underlines or anything. This is just where I decided to throw my arty stuff. I have it kind of divided into pretty much two groups of things, underwater pictures and everything else. And yeah, you know, beyond that, I think it's pretty easy to just kind of kick
right,
around and find
most
things.
Most assuredly is. Very welcoming and inclusive. I love
good.
It. Good.
I always put the most current project up in the top level nav for people to find, so that's why you will find the Ant Farm project right there and ready for you.
Good. So until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
All right.
Thanks, David. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my conversation with David Peterman and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home with just a little prompting from you. They're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. There's no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. And remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? So, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out. Chak 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 ch